Our first presenter is Ms. Hannah Lantos. She is a doctoral student at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. Her research focuses on adolescence, reproductive health, and urban health, and fits into a life course approach to health and social determinants framework. Her undergrad and master's work is in international development in the Middle East and Africa, and her dissertation work, which we were just talking about, is a comparison study between Baltimore and Johannesburg in South Africa. So with that, I'll turn the microphone over. And if it's okay, we'll take maybe one clarifying question after each presentation, but then save the bulk of our questions to the very end.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I just noticed that my slides are a little off, so hopefully the rest of them are okay. But I'm going to be presenting today our paper, Neighborhoods and Adolescent Sexual Behaviors, and this is an analysis of the WAVE study in East Baltimore. So I have no financial relationships to disclose, and neither do my co-authors. Just quickly, let me start by giving you a brief outline of what I'm going to talk about today. So I'll give you a brief introduction of the issue, quickly review just very briefly some of the existing literature, then I'll tell you a little bit about our study objectives in this analysis, the methods that we used, go on to discuss our results, and I'll end with a little bit of a discussion, some discussion about the strengths and limitations, and hopefully leave you with the public health significance of this work. So everyone here at APHA this year should probably know the importance of how where we live affects our health. This year's theme of healthography focuses on this question and makes us think about our context and how geography affects where we live. Where we live affects our closeness to green space, our access to healthy food, the safety of the environments we live in, and even the buildings that we live in. So this paper continues some of this question and explores how where we live affects adolescent sexual and reproductive health. So historically, much of the literature exploring the relationships between neighborhoods and sexual health has looked across large cities to explain differences between different types of neighborhoods in order to explain some of the persistent racial and class differences that we see in adolescent sexual health behaviors and outcomes. Much of this research found that neighborhoods did attenuate racial and class effects. More recent work has started to look at how neighborhoods affect behavior, and maybe even how neighborhoods affect the networks and the type of sexual partners that we engage with. For instance, Jackie Jennings' work has found that holding behaviors like condom use or number of partners constant, adolescents living in neighborhoods with drug markets are much more likely to have an STI. Jennings and her co-authors suggest that this is probably because even if one's own behaviors are averagely risky, these adolescents are much closer to people who engage in much riskier sex. So this paper utilizes data from adolescents in Baltimore who are all from a quite similar neighborhood to explore the associations amongst kids who might look similar. So hopefully we're starting to bridge some of these two different research agendas in the past of looking across big neighborhoods and then also looking specifically at behavior. We hope that this paper will build on both of these literatures going forward. So the objectives of this analysis were to explore the relationship between individual factors and sexual and reproductive health for boys and girls in Baltimore, and then to explore the relationship between neighborhood factors and sexual and reproductive health, and then finally to combine both the individual and neighborhood variables into one full model, and look at whether or not individual factors are changed by the inclusion of neighborhood factors. The data for this analysis comes from a broader parent study, the WAVE study, which stands for the Well-Being of Adolescents in Vulnerable Environments. It was conducted between 2010 and 2013 in five different sites around the world and included both a qualitative formative phase and a quantitative survey. Four domains primarily were explored in the survey: sexual and reproductive health, physical safety, mental health, and substance use. This analysis only focuses on the quantitative data and primarily on the sexual and reproductive health variables. And for further methods, we're really excited. The Journal of Adolescent Health is publishing a supplement this week. So there's on the WAVE study. So if you want to learn more about a bunch of the different outcomes and also much more in depth about the methods, please check it out. I think it'll be online this week. So the WAVE study sampled adolescents using respondent-driven sampling. RDS is a chain-based recruitment strategy akin to snowball sampling, and I'm happy to take further questions about this, but I won't go into a ton of detail. But essentially, RDS collects additional data on the networks and the recruitment chains in order to allow an analysis to include weights in the final analysis. It aims specifically to include hard-to-reach populations, so in the case of the WAVE study, we were hoping to reach out-of-school youth and unstably housed youth who may have been missed by a typical school or household-based survey. There were three inclusion criteria for participation in the study. Coming in with one of these RDS coupons that the kids handed out to their friends, being between the ages of 15 and 19, and living in one of the specified neighborhoods by site. In Baltimore, this was the 5 zip codes of East Baltimore. And in verifying adolescents' eligibility for the study, we asked them to point on a map to what neighborhood they lived in, and then we recorded that information, and that's where some of this analysis is, why this analysis is able to take place. And is also why it's only able to take place in Baltimore, because we didn't do that in the other sites. So our final analytic sample in this study is 422. There's 179 females and 243 males, and data were collected by an ACASI survey that took approximately half an hour. In this paper, we have 4 behavioral outcomes: sex in the last 12 months, condom use at last sex, condom use at first sex, and sex before age 14. We chose these 4 outcomes particularly because we think that they encompass a range of risky behavior. So we wanted to look specifically kind of in this order. We think that sex in the last 12 months is the least risky behavior, and especially for these adolescents is particularly normative, and as long as it's protected and violence-free, is maybe even a resilient behavior for many of these adolescents. And then the other outcomes are increasingly risky. For this presentation, I'll only focus on sex in the last 12 months and condom use for the sake of time, but also because that allows me to show you kind of this less risky as well as one more riskier outcome. So the individual variables that we include in the model are age, early puberty, adolescent social support, and what adult raised you, and observation of violence. Age is a continuous variable. Early puberty is a binary variable defined as menarche before age 12 for girls and a first nocturnal emission before age 13 for boys. Adult social support is a scale that measured the presence of a caring adult in one's life. This was not necessarily a parent. This was a caring adult in one's home. What adult raised you is 2 parents, 1 parent or other. And the violence observation is also a scale that measures frequency of a number of events of observing violence in one's neighborhood. And this includes things like seeing an arrest, seeing a drug deal, hearing shots, seeing someone shot, something like that. So as I mentioned previously, because in Baltimore we asked the adolescents when they were coming in as inclusion criteria what neighborhood they lived in, we were able to bring in data from the American Community Survey based on the neighborhoods that are defined by Baltimore City. So the neighborhood variables that we include in this analysis are percent of houses in one's neighborhood that are vacant, percent of households in one's neighborhood that are female-headed, percent of people in one's neighborhood with a college diploma, and the median income. And we spent some time trying to decide whether or not we should include high school diploma or college diploma, and kind of ultimately included college diploma for 2 reasons. There are fewer people in all of these neighborhoods that have a college diploma, so it seemed to capture deprivation in a stronger way. And also Baltimore City specifically has a new initiative to really promote transition from high school to college, and so this seemed like also a potential area for policy movement. So our statistical models, first we did multi-level analyses and didn't find results. We think that this is probably because our neighborhoods are all very similar in East Baltimore, and so we aren't capturing enough variation at the neighborhood level to be able to detect multi-level differences. We then conducted logistic regression with just the individual factors, then logistic regression with just the neighborhood factors, and finally a model with both. All of the analyses are stratified by boys and girls and weighted with RDS2 weights. So, results. This is the first table of results. This is girls. And again, let me just walk you through quickly. We have two outcomes, sex in the last 12 months on the left, condom use at last sex on the right. The first model is just with the individual variables. The second model is the full model. I don't show here the model with just the neighborhood variables because nothing between that model and the full model for the neighborhood variables changed in direction or significance. So these are the same. And then yellow is, it's marked with the level of significance, but yellow is odds ratios greater than one that are significant, and blue is odds ratios that are less than one that are significant. So in the first models about sex in the last 12 months, we only see that age and violence observation are significantly associated with increased odds for girls. So this means that as participants got older or saw more violence in their neighborhood, they had a higher odds for engaging in sexual activity in the last year. With age, this is logical, and overall, this is somewhat supported by our hypothesis that we thought that there would be fewer factors associated with sex in the last 12 months. At the neighborhood level, we also see that the percent of people in the neighborhood with a college diploma is associated with increased sexual activity, and that income is associated with decreased activity. In the condom use models, one of the things that is striking is how many more individual variables are associated with condom use at last sex. Age, early puberty, and violence observation are all associated with decreased odds, while interestingly, being raised by other relatives is very protective. Adult social support is also really interesting because it changes. It's one of the few variables that changes from the just individual model to the neighborhood model and becomes protective and significant. And then neighborhood vacancy and college diplomas are protective as well. For boys, the structure is the same. So we see the sex in the last 12 months on the left, condom use on the right, individual model, full model. One of the striking factors for boys in both of these models is that there's so much less that's significant. For sex in the last 12 months, nothing is significant across both models. We see that age is associated with higher odds of sexual activity in the first model, but not in the second. Similarly, being raised by one parent is not significant in the first model, but is in the second. In the condom use models, we see consistency across the models, We see consistency across the models, and again, being raised by someone other than two parents is protective, violence observation is riskier. So, what does this all mean? First of all, boys and girls seem to be different, very, very different. We see that for girls, a number of our predictors at both the neighborhood and individual levels are significant, but for boys, many fewer are. At the same time, there are individual factors that change in both magnitude and significance when the neighborhood variables are included for both boys and girls. This suggests that there actually probably is some confoundedness with neighborhood and that we should be considering neighborhood in our models. However, when the neighborhood models are just tested by themselves versus in the full model, there isn't much change, which suggests that we're also probably capturing something that is real about neighborhood effects. And finally, our hypotheses about sexual activity in the last year seem to be supported that sexual activity is less risky or is less associated with some of these predictors that we think it would be than with condom use. So there are a number of strengths as well as limitations to this analysis. The inclusion of the neighborhood variables is a really exciting step, I think, for using this data. It's also really exciting to be using this data because it really focuses on this very homogenous population and homogenous area of East Baltimore, and hopefully allows us to explore potential pathways. And the ability to look across a number of different sexual risks, I think, is also really exciting. There's also a number of limitations. Without much variation at the neighborhood level, we can't really do our multi-level analyses. The sample sizes are also quite small, so for girls with the condom use variables, we're looking at small n's. We also have outcome variables that are behaviors, not particular outcomes. So our sample size for things like pregnancy, we're just way too small. And we have self-reported STI data, which we didn't want to look at. So condom use, even though it's self-reported, was, we thought, better than STI results. So, this is my last slide. This is where I'll wrap up. But we see that from this data, going along with this year's APHA theme, that neighborhood matters. We also see that neighborhood seems to matter more for girls than for boys. And like the newer neighborhood that research that I discussed at the beginning of the presentation, this suggests that we still need to better understand the dynamics within particular neighborhoods that are particularly homogenous, as these neighborhood effects are clearly tied intricately into individual behaviors and social norms, probably. Understanding how girls and boys are affected differently will demand of us a much better understanding of what neighborhood means and what these measures potentially mean for how adolescents behave. Thus, one of our overwhelming feelings as we start to try to understand these results is that we have a lot of work ahead of us to understand what does matter for boys. We need to better understand what are the individual and neighborhood factors that put some of the most vulnerable boys in our most vulnerable neighborhoods at risk. So, I'd love comments, but before we do that, I'd also just like to thank a couple of people. So Beth Marshall, my co-author, is in the back. The adolescents who participated in the WAVE study shared lots of information with us, and to the WAVE team of researchers around the world. So thank you.